So to open up the session, we will have a presentation by Jane Edwards, and it's my real pleasure to introduce Jane to all of you. Jane is the Dean of International and Professional Experiences at Yale University. And before she came to Yale, she held the new position of Director of International Studies at Harvard, where she initiated an ambitious program of international experiences for undergrads. She served for 10 years in a similar position at Wesleyan University, where she also ran a program in a less commonly taught languages and taught for the Department of Romance Languages. She holds a BA and an MA from Cambridge University and a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania. She has published very widely and is co-author with Humphrey Tonkin of The World in the Curriculum. And she also presents on wide topics of international education. She's holding several positions in a number of organizations, and please join me in welcoming her here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Heike, and thank you for that introduction. However, I know better. You should never, ever follow a student panel. It's death. Add to that the fact that I am going to bring us down from the heights of the extraordinary meaningfulness that we have been talking about in order to talk about things like institutional structures, strategic planning, and briefly, money. And so, sorry about that. You've had the best part of the day. This is just what comes next. The other thing I should probably say before I begin is that I have a lot of experience with different kinds of institutional structures because I have been at six different US institutions, one of them twice. And I began my career at the University of Pennsylvania. Nice to meet AT, who had that same experience. And then I went to Harvard, and then I went to the State University of New York, Potsdam, even more remote. I mean, seriously remote as opposed to Ithaca. And then I went to the University of Hartford, where I taught for a few years. Then I went to Wesleyan Liberal Arts College, where I learned a whole collection of structural issues and how to work with the faculty in that kind of environment. And then there was 3 years at Harvard, a very dramatic moment in the history of Harvard University, and I'll tell some scurrilous stories from those days. And then wound up at Yale, where I am now in my eighth year. So what I'm going to talk about is really kind of gritty. That is, I'm going to talk about the things that institutions are thinking about, if an institution can think, and about how those structures and decisions impact the kinds of programs and initiatives that you are all so effectively putting together. I have to say, when I received the 30 case studies, which looked like a lot, I thought, this is going to make interesting reading. And then it started to snow on Wednesday, and I was marooned in my kitchen. And by the time I had finished reading the 30 studies, my primary emotion was envy. Because I'm not sure I could produce this from Yale University or from Harvard University, and I thought it was pretty impressive, particularly because of the fact that you had gotten around to articulating your learning outcomes and all the rest of those goals, and I thought it was just wonderful. I was also, by the way, just as a footnote, struck by differences in discourse by discipline. That is, that as I read through these cases, it's a very different discourse that people use to describe what it is that they're doing. And of course, that's one of the challenges for collaboration in institutions of this kind. Okay, plan for the next 15 minutes. Briefly on the big picture, structural issues and underlying themes driving what we do. Because actually, I think most of what we do is in fact part of a larger picture, whether within our own division, whether within the institution, whether within the larger picture of our students' lives outside the institution as well as within it. And a note on contributing elements. Okay, the big picture. This is going to go quick. It is true that internationalization is on everyone's institutional mission these days. We've already recognize that. And that is because of what has been stated so articulately by many people in the course of the day, the need for a workforce which indeed sees the world in a new way in this new age of globalization. Okay. How this is going to play out is going to be determined to some extent by the educational mission of the institution. Now, I'm bringing Harvard and Yale to this. So there's the, you know, educational mission? What's our educational mission? Excellence. That's the word I hear. Doesn't tell me much, but that's the code word that's used for what we're trying to do. Whatever we're going to do, it's primarily it's got to be of the highest quality. And so if I am going to propose any kind of internationalization strategy, I have to understand what it is that my institution thinks it's doing. Now, if your institution thinks it's doing something completely different, and at the University of Hartford, what they were primarily concerned with is, are we preparing people who can be effective contributors to the workforce in particular kinds of occupations and live a decent life and make good decisions as citizens of the world? The word that gets thrown around, and I'll bet this is true at Cornell also, the word that gets thrown around at Yale is about leadership. Not going to say any more about that. The second thing that drives institutions is reputation in key sectors. So when you are deciding what kind of internationalization strategy you're going to pursue, some of this will be to do with how are you going to recruit the best possible faculty and students in whatever zones, disciplines, and countries you wish to recruit. Reputation is really important. That's also going to impact, of course, what kinds of money you're going to bring in to do that. The rankings, not going to refer to those. I'm sure you never think about rankings at Cornell. We certainly never think about them at Yale. Of course, the world has become enormously complicated because of the implications of rankings for example, the languages in which people publish. This is serious business, but it's not the business of today's meeting. Okay. I am not kidding when I say this. Whose initiative is it that you're following? Now, we know that you have a report from your president. He cares about this. This is absolutely clear. Cares enough that he created a task force, which produced an excellent report, to which I have read the responses. And then I got to read Fred Longueville's response to all of this. And so I know whose initiative this is. Right now, it is the institution's initiative. That may break off in different kinds of ways down the line, but this is serious business. I know this. I knew this at Yale because of the fact that President Levin had announced that Yale was going to become a global university. And so before you know it, of course, everybody is scurrying about figuring out how are we going to become a global university, or how are we going to sort of demonstrate we already are one. So you've got to do one of those two things, both of which involve data. What's the buy-in? Now, that's, I imagine, why we're all here. How many of you are faculty who have already engaged in some kind of student meaningful international experience initiative thing? Yeah, so there's a lot of people for whom that isn't the case. And what you're going to do is, of course, go out and convert everybody else to this new mandate, which is going to help everybody secure the kinds of experiences, which I thought, by the way, were unbelievably impressive. And I listened to a lot of students. So this was pretty impressive for me. But the buy-in has to come from a lot of different people. Let me just say this. It is very easy to assume that if you build it, they will come. I've imagined some truly wonderful programs, and not all of them are still running. And the reason that they're not still running is because I was seeing this from my own personal values proposition, regional interests, understanding of the way the discipline was going, I wasn't asking myself the question, how is this going to fit into the lives, interests, concerns of the students who will need to participate in this initiative? It doesn't matter how stunning and brilliant it is. If you don't have the kind of layered buy-in that produces participation, Oh, this is the really important one. Follow the money. Listen, I'm going to talk about money now, but when we have our panel, nobody gets to talk about money at all, okay? That's the rule, because money's really significant. Let me bring from Yale some examples of the way in which money operates out there. So here's example number one. This is before the financial crash. It would not happen now. Not here, not at Yale, pretty much nowhere. When President Levin decided that Yale was going to be a global university, he said, okay, fine, so we've got to get all our undergraduate students abroad. What's that going to take? And they said, well, quite a lot, on account of the fact that we only send 10 to 13% of our undergraduates abroad during the academic year for credit. 10 to 13%, which, by the way, is a number that has remained perfectly flat for the entire last decade. Doesn't matter what I do. Tap dancing, you name it, nothing works. So, he said, okay, fine. How are we gonna fix this then? And I wasn't there at this time, but I would have told him exactly the same thing, and because I told my boss at Harvard exactly the same thing. And my boss at Harvard, mind you, I was too down from him, but my conceptual boss at Harvard was Larry Summers. And if he tells you he wants numbers, he is really serious about this and scary. So, you know, what are you going to do? I said, well, what you're going to need to do is figure out summer initiatives that meet the needs of interests and interests of our students, and in addition, you are going to have to figure out how to pay for this. Because summer initiatives are an added cost to pretty much everybody, whichever way you look at it, unless you're running a particular kind of institution, which Cornell isn't, and Yale isn't, and Harvard isn't, and neither are any of the rest. So, what President Levin did was establish the International Summer Award, which is basically one additional term of financial aid for one international summer experience. And he put it in place, and it changed the entire picture of international summer experience at Yale. We apply this International Summer Award not only for study abroad, but also for internships abroad that we run or that meet a particular set of criteria that we run. Also for various kinds of service experiences, again, according to a nice, tight collection of criteria. We're very interested in quality here. But in fact, it has been used by hundreds and hundreds of students to have an experience that they simply would not otherwise have. Okay, I do understand that it is unlikely that you will be instituting this initiative tomorrow. So, what else did we do? Thing number two that I did was something that, this is a Yale initiative. If you don't have, and this, by the way, runs, there was a capital campaign in process at the time, so, you know, you hope to bring in a lot of this money from donors, and I bet international is going to be high on the agenda for whatever is your next capital campaign here at Cornell, and that's going to be great. It's a big piece of money. So I'm also always interested in the question of how do you do things that don't cost anything at all that will make things better. And when I was brought from Harvard to Yale, there were a lot of new initiatives going on. There were faculty-led Yale summer programs. There were study abroad opportunities run by other institutions. There was a ton of fellowship funding for independent research projects of various kinds, and for things like, you know, running around the world looking at business, you know, whatever, that some donor had decided was a good idea and given Yale the money, and there it was. So there was a lot of money for these kinds of activities. Students apply for the money, and they use it, and they go off. That's run in another office, right? There are a lot of postgraduate international experiences. A Mitchell scholar you had sitting here, a great example of a post-grad fellowship opportunity. Office doing those kinds of things. And then career services, running, because they were entrepreneurial, a little international internship program. Now, if you're a student at Yale University seeking an international summer experience, that means you've got five casts of characters that you might need to talk to about this. Not a great idea. So, since nobody quite knew what we were doing in those days, I said, well, I think probably sort of what we need is, you know, let's have a center and do it all together. And Peter Salovey, who is now the president at Yale, was my boss in those days. He was the dean of Yale College. And he said, I haven't the faintest idea what you should do. What would you need to start a center? And as it happened, all these offices were in the two floors of the same building. And I said, well, you know, new rug might be nice. And so we got a new rug, and we got a website. And the website pulled together all of these different sources for activities which had not been related in any way, shape, or form. I'm staring at you because I know you studied abroad for the whole year. And I'm thinking about your experience, and that you would have seen that you had, you know, the whole year experience, there could have been an internship afterwards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We thought that was a great idea. So, and what essentially was budget neutral was the Center for International and Professional Experience. So that didn't cost anything. So that was good. Then, maybe there are even revenue streams. And this was an accident. This is how this one happened. And as I said, these are scurrilous stories from Harvard and Yale. This story is about bringing international students to Yale University. Now, Yale has a perfectly healthy international student population in numerically, and I'm sure they're all perfectly healthy physically, but we have a good demographic about international students from all over the world because we are need blind internationally, which doesn't mean it's an even playing field because the percentage of undergraduates is not allowed to balloon. It's kept fairly stable, but within that pool, it's need blind, which means that we have astonishing international students at Yale. And in fact, my colleague Anne Coleman, who runs the Office of International Students and Scholars and a center for international students and scholars at Yale University, designed to help improve everybody's communication with everybody and the experience of all our international community members, we have one of those things. But when things looked really bad in 2009, got this call, and they've come up with an idea in the president's office, and the idea goes like this. Why don't we let a lot of people bring groups of international students to sit on the edge of Yale in swing space, and then they could take a Yale course or two, and we could charge them all a lot of money. How about that? And I took a deep breath, and left the office and went back to Yale College and said, okay, guys, what could we do that would be wonderful? And this involved getting the buy-in. You know, Yale is organized on the principle of residential colleges, and those are very tight communities. You're assigned to a residential college when you're admitted. You stay in it for the full 4 years. Three of those years, you would ordinarily live within the college. People don't move around much, and those are very much the student's home. And so the notion of bringing people in for the short term was not attractive. However, we did what you do in these situations. We did what you all did. We found a couple of people who thought it was a great idea and who other people were willing to listen to. We seeded this. We set it out. We set in all kinds of standards for who these students were going to be and what they were going to do while we were there. We put it together, and we, in fact, created the Visiting International Student Program, which is a fully integrated study abroad program at Yale University from students from five partner institutions. We do everything we can think of to produce the kinds of learning outcomes that Mick talked about so eloquently. And it's a revenue stream. And that has been wonderfully helpful to us in pushing forward the other kinds of initiatives we have. So that's my follow the money story. There are other things about it, big ticket items. Suddenly you find yourself starting a program in, I don't know, Van Diemen's Land, because a donor has given the institution the Van Diemen's Land Fund, and you're going to be following that. But these, for me, were the sort of big things. In terms of why money is important also, particularly the donor thing, and I think this isn't just Yale, this is everybody. It's definitely Harvard, it's definitely Cornell. We have at Yale something called the Light Fellowship Program, established by Richard U. Light. And this is a program for the intensive study abroad of Japanese, Korean, and Chinese. And we get to send, it's fully paid, no questions asked. So you get to spend your summer on an intensive language program in one of those countries, or you can spend a semester, or you can spend a year. It's competitive, but it's a lot of money. So we're sending between 100 and 150 students, mostly undergraduates, some graduates every year. Now, internationalization at home, guys, what do you think this has done to language levels at Yale? My light bulb moment was when I headed into one of the residential colleges for lunch, and at the table that I sat down at were two guys, they were kind of football team folks, and they were sort of yakking away about, something football-ish, and then all of a sudden I listened to them and they have switched to Chinese. So, your culture changes. Okay. Right. I'm going to have to move a great deal faster, like unbelievably fast. Okay, so the crucial question, when you are starting your initiative, and I have heard, I've only been here like 2 minutes, and I've already heard conversations which indicate that this is an issue at Cornell as it is everywhere. Who owns this decision? If you're going to do something new, who owns the decision about whether it gets done or not? And until you know that, you don't know how this is going to play out and whether you're going to get support or not. It's the bottom line question. Does local ownership serve agreed upon goals, or should it be centralized? Now, it seems to me that you are making some moves towards various kinds of centralization. There are reasons for that, because you get economies of scale and you get all kinds of other useful shared information. I thought originally about doing this presentation as a series of organization charts. But most institutions, you look at the organization chart, and what it is a whole series of unconnected boxes sitting around with the odd dotted line to somebody else. You're nodding, I'm not wrong. Okay. I really do know I have to stop, and I'm going to bag the rest of most of the rest of this. But I do want you to watch this one really carefully. The hidden factors that determine how successful your initiative will be, they are hidden until you bump into them. And they are to do with all these kinds of things. Am I wrong? Have you not had this experience? Yes, I'm seeing a nod out there. Not knowing how to get your bills paid abroad, or as at Yale, not being able to get them paid in a timely fashion, not being able to figure out how to hire somebody in compliance while you were in Nepal. You name it, it's out there. And most of these things are hidden. And do the structures in place, and it's in italics, because the question that you are currently asking yourselves, as far as I can tell, is do the structures in place serve your goals as well as they possibly might? Right, just a couple of other things. No, I'm going to pass over this. If you're interested, Harvard is federal and Yale is imperial, and that changes the way you make decisions. Planning from the top and initiatives from the ground up, you need both of them. You can't do it without both. Your wonderful faculty notions are absolutely terrific, but you are talking about bringing things to be more than the sum of their parts. So that's important. Collaborations, we're going to be talking about that in just a minute. Okay, now, I think I'm going to stop after this one, but I do need to put this on the table. When I raise the question of meaningful experiences with my cast of staff members who spend all their time talking to students, they were sort of in uproar, because the question of what meaningful is, we've been talking about it all day. They said that working with our students as they do on a daily basis, they are better off because of the very different levels of preparation that students bring into the interaction, which will determine how much progress they are going to make in whatever their experience is. They like to think about thoughtful activity. So what we ask of our students is that they approach all of their activities thoughtfully, as much as they possibly can. We think that indeed that's what is going to produce an openness, an investment to, I'm staring at Mick here because this is his thing. But the question is, how do you send your students, this is what we have learned from, you know, the however many, we've been through 8,000 or 9,000 students during the time that I've been there in my immediate environment. What we've learned is that goal setting and thoughtfulness on the part of the student need to be matched with insight and the kind of wonderful planning skills that you folks have shown if you indeed want to produce the outcome that you need. I'm going to stop because I have to. So never mind the other pieces of this presentation. Let me stop right there, bringing us back, hopefully, to what is meaningful, and asking Heike to organize our panel, who will now join us up here.